my story of the chicken soup, only because it's very typical of our Louisville Jewish community that when all of these chickens and chicken soup and matzo balls spoiled, naturally we had to have food for the two Seders out at Fort Knox. And Morris Salmon, of blessed memory, stationed himself at one of the butcher shops. And when our Louisville Jewish housewives went in to buy their orders at the butcher shops, after they would give evidence of the ration stamps that they owned for buying meat, which they probably had saved up for the holiday, Morris would ask them, "Now give us the meat that you bought," and explain to them what had happened, that we had had to throw away a lot of our food. The money we could get donated, Morris would write us the check at a moment's notice. So that part wasn't a problem, but we really had to replace the meat and the chickens. And we took away everybody's meat orders as they came through, and their chickens, because there were no more chickens left in the city of Louisville. And there were many meatless Seders that year, because it was very typical of our Louisville Jewish community to hand over their big packages of meat to Morris Salmon. And our soldiers had a traditional meal, even though many of the families here in Louisville did not have. And that was not an unusual kind of thing to have happen. Cigarettes were something that was that were just about non-existent in Louisville. And some of the cigarette companies, who in light of our present day information, I don't know that it was such a favor, but at the time it seemed like a tremendous favor, used to send us over cartons of cigarettes for our servicemen on who were here on weekends. And we literally rationed out cigarettes. We would hand a serviceman a cigarette when he came in to register for his bed. And by the way, these beds were 35 cents a bed in our dormitories. Knesset Israel, which was just a block or so away from us, also had a dormitory. And we would give them a dormitory check and a cigarette. And this was really a big deal that they would get for 35 cents. They would come in and register for their dormitory beds immediately, because there was such a shortage of overnight places that after our dormitories were filled and we checked with the other USOs and there were no dormitory spaces left, we would start calling families and ask them if they would take a serviceman overnight on Saturday night, that there was just no place to stay. One of the very popular places was the lawn at the public library, by the way. And this really wasn't in any kind of decent weather. There were servicemen who were supposed to have been run away by police, but instead they enjoyed police protection, because the police really realized that there was just no place else for them to go. And the other thing that I really do think that is relevant to the armed services story is that we used to have what we called USO show troops. Morris Salmon, again, who was Mr. Music. He really was very active in music circles here, and by the way, the originator of our Jewish communities, or our then YMHA Orchestra, of which the local Louisville Civic Orchestra is an offshoot, were all originated by Morris Salmon. This man could not read a note of music, and was the most dedicated individual probably known to man in the field of music. And he organized USO show troops, which were composed of professional and semi-professional acts that went to Fort Knox once and twice a month and would put on four shows on a Sunday. These people would literally drop when it was interesting to see the bus that left the YMHA and the bus that came back to the YMHA. The one that left was noisy and excited and that sort of thing, and the one that returned 2 o'clock in the morning came back with people absolutely hanging over seats and exhausted. And don't forget, this was not in air conditioning days. Those hot rides to and from Fort Knox in the hot afternoon sun, and the unair-conditioned service clubs, which were absolutely sweat baths. But these were boys who did not get into town. Sometimes there just wasn't room on the buses to bring them into town. They could get a pass, but there was no way. By the time they finished standing in line, the pass period was ended. so that they did have some excellent entertainment out at Fort Knox. A couple of the acts that I think of right at the moment actually went on to fame and fortune. The Petticoats, which appeared on Arthur Godfrey's show in later years, originated as the House Sisters, three sisters here at our old YMHA, which entertained at Fort Knox, and who Mara Salmon discovered these young kids from Memphis, Indiana, and who used to come in and go out on our USO shows. Stop it. We on?
Yeah, we're on.
All right. I remained with the USO until 1964. At that time, the USO's money was very short, and they determined that their funds were better spent in overseas clubs, so they withdrew funds from this operation, and the USO Jewish Welfare Board office was closed down, and the Jewish Community Center took over the Armed Services Program, and I became the Jewish Community Center Armed Services worker half-time. So that right after this happened, this happened I think in like February, and in March or April, Israel Naamani, who was the Bureau of Jewish Education Director, had a severe coronary and was going to have to curtail some of his activity. So Arthur Kling, with whom you may be acquainted, contacted me, and he emphatically told me I would now work the other half time for the Bureau of Jewish Education as Israel Naamani's administrative assistant, and that if I would like to come in the next day and discuss it, it was all right with him. So Arthur Kling had spoken, and I went in the next day and spoke with Israel Naamani and with Arthur Kling, and I became the Bureau of Jewish Education administrative assistant. Shortly after that, I think it was that September, Israel had a severe coronary and was never able to return to the Bureau. So for two long years, there was a period when he had not been replaced, when there were interviews and decisions and studies. The Jewish community education was studied by Dr. Dinsky, and there was no executive director of the Bureau. And during that time, we carried on as best we could. I stayed with the Bureau for 10 years, and then in 1974, I guess it was, I was offered the opportunity to work for the Jewish Community Center full-time as the adult program worker. And this I welcomed for a lot of reasons. Really, it was very difficult working in two capacities. There's really no such thing as two half-time jobs when they're both sitting at the same desk. I mean, it's very difficult to allocate that kind of time. And I guess my age was catching up with me. I was finding it a little bit more difficult to work this arrangement out. So I very happily took the adult job, which, by the way, was the beginning, which was begun, well, that's not really what I want to say. 30 years ago, David had that job. That was where my romance began, is what I should say. I had worked myself up 30 years later to the job that David held when I met him. I won't tell you, not because I earn it necessarily, but because times have changed, so I won't tell you the difference in the salaries from then and now. It's fantastic that he finally got a raise to $37.50 a year before he left here. But he did go back to St. Louis and to George Warren Brown School of Social Work. I might tell you, because I do enjoy a great deal of pride in our Jewish Community Center. In fact, my husband accuses me of being the proudest American, Jewish, Kentucky, Jefferson County, Louisville Jewish Community Center person in the world. And I probably am. I really am. I like being in Louisville, and I like being at the Louisville Jewish Community Center. And when I go any place, I visit Jewish community centers. And after 34 years of being around a Jewish community center, I have some basis for making a judgment. And I really don't think we have to take a back seat to anybody. Our building is always busy. Our adult program is as varied as we can possibly get it as far as an expression of interest is concerned. We have classes in the arts, in oil painting, water colors, figure sketching, ceramics, all that sort of thing. We bring a scholar in residence here from Israel each year for 2 weeks who visits our center and brings a little Israeli flavor to Jewish organizations here as well as to community organizations. Our most recent one spoke to 1,110 people as best we can count during her 2 weeks here, and did, by the way, go to Canada for a rest after she left here. Our orchestra has continued uninterruptedly, even during the war, by the way, and again, I sound like a patron of Mara Simons, and I guess I am, but even during the war, when we lost our orchestra conductor, Mara Simon was instrumental in combining the services of a USO director who was himself a musician, and Jack Gottlieb kept our orchestra going when our civilian director was drafted. Reuben Sherrod, who is well known in music circles here, directed our orchestra until this past year. Now we have another very capable conductor who teaches music at Seneca High School, Joe Klein. We have people who have played. Mr. Silver, Eric Silver, has played in this orchestra for something like 40 years. So both he and the orchestra must be doing something right.
What about the theater? Do you have anything to do with that?
Yes, the Heritage Theater is in my department. Heritage did Milk and Honey last year, which was very successful. They did a couple of things which were a little bit less successful. This coming year, we are hoping to revamp the entire Heritage Theater program and perhaps do just one instead of three plays and do one and make it one big musical. Hopefully, The Education of Hyman Kaplan, which you're probably too young to remember, but it was a darling book about immigrants coming to this country, and it has now been made into a musical, and we are hoping that that will be the musical that Heritage Theater does. They also do skits and one-act plays and have entertained for many of the local organizations, the sisterhoods, and that sort of thing. By the way, again, because I always have to mention the armed services, I guess this really is my first love. I have to tell you, because it's very fresh in my mind, that we just sent out our letter. Again, we are one of the organizations who has an uninterrupted history of serving the veterans at the Veterans Hospital, the patients at the Veterans Hospital. And each of our women's organizations in this community goes out to the Veterans Hospital and gives bingo parties and prizes and refreshments and that sort of thing once a month for the patients who can't leave the wards. So that even that is is something very special for our Jewish Community Center, I think. I did want to add in my area of endeavor that we are attempting something that seems to be the in thing in many of the centers now, family programming. And we are trying to make a whole evening of programs that will interest mothers and fathers, as well as children of all ages, in different programs running simultaneously. And this also, by the way, includes some single parents who look for things to do with their children, and this seems to in other communities to be working well.
Is there a program for single, is there a singles club or a program for single parents?
We have just established a group called Single Parents, which we are, at this point, not making any attempt to make a social thing. It's not a, not that I have any objection to their meeting, the men and women meeting and becoming social friends, but our main thrust has been, we've had one session on budget counseling for some of these young divorcees who are, and most of them are divorcees, a couple of them are widows, who really find themselves thrown into a situation where they aren't able to handle budgeting and probably didn't in their married situation. So there is that kind of thing. We had one session with a social worker who specializes in that kind of situation where a mother feels that she has to say yes more often than she would like to her children because she has to compensate for the fact that there's not a father around, or in one of the cases there's a father who has a similar problem. So we've had that kind of thing. We're going to have one on we're going to have a session on estate planning, which is also a vital part for these people. And in addition, of course, we want to integrate them into our regular family programming, which we hope will work out. I think you really might be interested in knowing, or if you don't already, that we have a very active senior adult program in which I'm not involved, except that I happen to be a busybody, and the office is right next to mine, and I'm very much interested and impressed by the things that they do. We have a nutrition program. Lunches are served here Sundays through Thursday. And I think it's interesting, by the way, I have to tell you that most nutrition programs in the community are Monday through Friday. But tradition dictates with our Jewish housewives, or even the men, that somehow Friday is the day that you prepare for Shabbos. And many of these people are living alone and really do not any longer do anything special for Shabbos, but it's traditional that they not go out, that they have to be busy Friday during the day. So our Friday attendance was very small, and it was changed to Sunday in order to get the 5 days in. And there is a great deal of sociability that goes along with this that is just fabulous. There are two men who are brothers who've been coming here, and I remember thinking at the time that I thought I knew everybody in the city of Louisville, and these men have been here probably all their lives, and I didn't even know they existed. They have no family here. And when they first came in, they live in a nursing home someplace downtown. They really were like zombies. They had the most expressionless faces. And now, if you would see them, it is so touching. They greet all of us when they come in here, and they are so animated. They play pool in the game rooms now. Excuse me. And really, all of this started with the nutrition and the transportation, by the way. We have a fabulous setup of a Red Cross van and driver that give these people the pickup and delivery service. And this makes a tremendous difference. I know there's a member of my own family who found it difficult to get here when she lost her driver, and who had really stopped coming to the programs and now is a regular again. And this is a marvelous asset. And if you'd see this place on Tuesdays in particular, because that's big program day, it is just beautiful. Also, at the other end of the spectrum, by the way, we have an extremely active children's department here, our crafts and our gym, and those programs that attract children on a regular basis, plus the fact that a few years ago, we began what we called Kiddish Kinder, and these children are as young as 4 years old or 3 years old. One of the groups has three-year-olds in it. And these children have an afternoon, Friday afternoon, of game playing and that sort of thing, which ends in benching licht and making Kiddish for on Friday afternoons, and it is just beautiful. Our junior high school-aged children are active here, and as a matter of fact, so much so that there is an effort being made to get a worker, at least part-time, who will work with the junior high school children, or young people, excuse me, they don't want to be called children, and I guess they really aren't. Our senior high groups, which is composed of clubs in addition to the mass activities that they do. I don't know if you know that they raised something like $1,100 for the United Jewish Campaign last year from their skit night. They do a cooperative venture of writing original skits and participating in them. And of course they charge admission, and the money, the proceeds, goes to the United Jewish Campaign. They of course have their basketball leagues and their softball. Our basketball team came in second in the nation this year. They won the national championship 2 years ago. But they have fun, and the fact that they win the championship is incidental, I hope. At least we all say so.
It's so good at doing it.
A newly arrived staff member, newly arrived last year, by the way, has a particularly unique function here. The community provides us with a shaliach.
Now, what is a shaliach?
Shaliach literally means messenger. And this is an Israeli messenger. He brings the message of Israel to the Louisville Jewish community, and in particular, in our case, to the Jewish Community Center, because this is where his office is. He is involved in all Israeli-oriented program, ongoing program, besides that which he himself initiates. He's very busy right this minute, by the way, in doing his share of the Belvedere Jewish Heritage exhibits. He goes out into the community. He has spoken at practically every public school in the community. When there's, as part of their history lessons, they are learning about the State of Israel, and he brings the message of the State of Israel to the public school systems, as well as to all of our Jewish organizations, and injects Israeli programming into all of our ongoing program. He's really been a very interesting asset to the community and to the Jewish Community Center. By the way, as I look around this room, I think that it is worth mentioning that our community, and particularly our kids who might not be so inclined to visit art museums, are treated to art exhibits in our patio room. Every month we have a different artist exhibiting, and in different forms of art. One of the months, by the way, is set aside for our own students, both the children and the adult students, to exhibit their art. And one of our children's paintings, by the way, sold this last exhibit that we had last May. We were able to make a lot of the Jewish Community Centers jealous. Some of them have better views than we do because they're built on hillsides and that sort of thing, like in West Orange, New Jersey. When they look out their windows, they see some beautiful shrubs and trees, but they don't see the ball diamonds and the tennis courts and the second pool. We have not only an Olympic-sized pool here, but we have a lap pool beside it that is really unique. There are some communities who have attempted to have folding doors and to make their indoor pools look like outdoor, but we can really boast of the two outdoor pools as well as the indoor pool, and our two kiddie pools that have the same kinds of filters that our big pools have, so they're not just places for little children to use for potties anymore. In addition to our own ongoing program here at the center, I think it is worthy of mention that our center houses the Louisville Jewish Day School, which is a full-day school, a parochial school, which is accredited by the state of Kentucky. And they make full use of our facilities. Their children get swimming lessons and use our gym facilities and make good use of the second floor of our building. In addition, about a half hour after they are dismissed, the Louisville Hebrew School, afternoon Hebrew School, meets in these same classrooms. And if you think that's not tight scheduling, you try to get the papers picked up from the first group in time for the second group to go into a nice, neat classroom, which usually works out. The library, which is down here in our front lobby, is run by the Bureau of Jewish Education, which is also housed in this building. And I don't know whether you're aware that several mornings a week, buses bring children here from the bring handicapped children and retarded children who are given swim lessons in our pool and by our staff. And this is a very important community contribution that we make here. Of course, our rooms are always filled with Hadassah, Ort, Council of Jewish Women, all of whom meet here in our building, B'nai B'rith, men and women, all of whom meet here in our building and make use of our facilities, our kitchen facilities, which are used like 25 hours a day now.
Annette, thank you very much for a very interesting interview, and this is being concluded on August the 8th, 1977.
August
9th.
It was begun on
1977 in the patio room of the Jewish Community Center. This is Margot Kling at the Jewish Community Center on August the 8th, interviewing Annette Sagerman. This is sponsored by the U of L Archives and the Jewish Community Federation. Now, Annette, if you would give us a little bit of your background.
My background is a very ordinary one, I'm afraid. I was born in Louisville and have lived in Louisville all my life. I have been educated in Louisville. My father was born in Latvia and came here for the reason that many Jewish people came in those days, to escape religious persecution. He had studied at the yeshiva in Latvia and was not particularly interested in being a rabbi for many reasons, not the least of which, as he used to tell us, was that his family was very, very poor, and some of the wealthier families considered it yichus, as well as a mitzvah, I suppose, to house or at least offer home hospitality to yeshiva bachers. And he found it a very uncomfortable experience to be wined and dined, as he said, on such luxuries as oranges and peas when his family was really in want.
When did your father come here?
So my father came here in 1905. And came by way of New York to Cleveland, to Louisville. The old man Hamburg, who was not unknown in Louisville, was a fixture on Preston Street between Jefferson and Market, was my father's uncle, my grandmother's brother. And he had come to this country and to Louisville many years before. And it was to him who my father came, I guess he would be considered my father's sponsor or something. Mr. Hamburg had what was considered a pawn shop. Well, it was originally, I guess, considered a secondhand store. As he became a little bit more, quote, sophisticated, he became a pawnbroker, which, by the way, many years later cost him his life. But that's a later story. But anyway, he was right down the street from the bathhouse, the public bathhouse, which was a great opportunity to catch people coming and going. He'd stand outside and wait until they were clean before he stopped them to ask them to come in to buy clothes. Why he was inhibited by their lack of cleanliness, I don't know, because he wasn't known especially for his own cleanliness.
What about your mother?
My mother was American born. My mother was born in St. Louis and was 5 years younger than my father. My mother was born in 1885. My father was born in 1895. And my mother also had some very old roots in Louisville. There was a Nathan Gold who lived here. This was my mother's uncle, who had a business on Jefferson Street. His claim to fame was he had a home on 43rd and Broadway. And this was where my parents met. My mother came here to visit her mother's brother. I'm trying to think of how to tell you who Mr. Gold it was. He is the, I don't know if you remember Evelyn Gold, who was married to Haskell Miller. It was her grandfather. She just died just very recently. But this family dates back. Mrs. Gold was a specter and dates back many years in Louisville. Do you remember the Stuart Specter's father who walked on crutches while this was his sister?
And then your parents were married?
My parents were married in St. Louis. My mother came here to mend a broken heart. My grandmother broke up a romance that had lasted like 6 years, but I don't think my grandmother realized it was a romance until my mother became engaged. And that was the days when mothers and fathers could tell their children what to do. And my grandmother said she didn't want this marriage because this man's father, this Jake Passer, who was a St. Louis man, and my mother's, I say, was a St. Louis woman, had a father and a brother who died of tuberculosis. And my grandmother decided that my mother would be a young widow if she married this man. She broke up the romance. By the way, I have to tell you that ultimately, he outlived my father and passed away around the same time as my mother did, because my family in St. Louis stayed in touch.
And then your parents lived here in Louisville?
Yes, my mother came here to mend a broken heart, and she stayed on 43rd and Broadway. Please don't forget that. It's very important. My mother's claim to fame was that they met in my aunt's home, my great aunt's home.
And then you were born?
And I was born in 1924. I was the second of our children. My sister Lorraine, who passed away 11 years ago, was born in 1918, and right after World War I. I was born in 1924, and my parents had a plan of putting a child in school and having another baby, because my mother worked with my father in the grocery business, so that my kid sister, Selma Jean, is like 5.5 years younger than I. We say we're 6 years apart, but this was all in Louisville. We are all, we all lived here all our lives, and we're educated in Louisville. In Lorraine's and my cases, we even married damned Yankees and brought them to Louisville to teach them how to live.
Then after your education, after your schooling, after your education, how did you become involved in the Jewish community?
Well, there was a very much involved and very influential gentleman called Charles W. Morris, for whom my cousin, Mildred Margulis, later Bayer, was working for the then Conference of Jewish Organizations. Charlie Morris had the conference office in his law office, and Mildred had worked temporarily for the United Jewish Campaign, which used to engage clerical workers for brief periods during the height of the campaign. And she worked for Charlie Morris, and when Charlie Morris tells somebody in his office, get a girl to work in a Jewish Welfare Board office, which is going to open in Louisville, you get a girl to work in the Jewish Welfare Board office. And Mildred contacted me and asked me, I was going to school at the time, and asked me if I would work part-time. And that was my introduction to the Jewish Welfare Board, which was where I started. Charlie Morris had decided that there should be a regional office here for all of the armed services offices in what was then called the Fifth Service Command. And it was Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, parts of Tennessee. And as I say, when Charlie Morris said it should be, it came about.
And where was this office
located? In the Marion E. Taylor Building, not coincidentally, right down the hall from Charlie Morris's office.
Right.
And he brought a man, Matt Handler, who had been the professional in the Chicago office. They brought them here, and I worked as Matt Handler's secretary. And as I say, I was going to school at the time, and it wasn't a busy office, so there was an opportunity for all of these things to happen. He traveled a great deal, And
And then from there, where did you go?
From there, I went to the Jewish Community Center. That was in 1940. I went into the regional office in 1943. And then the Jewish Community Center, when Matt Handler...
Which at that time was the old YMHA.
That's right. Yes, I went to the YMHA. There wasn't a Jewish Community Center for many years, until many years later. And at that time, Bert Horowitz was the executive director. The first USO man was Ray Fisher, and he had left and had gone to an overseas assignment for the Jewish Welfare Board. And Bert Horowitz, who the last I heard was a Jewish War Veterans professional in Pittsburgh, he may still be, I don't know if he's even still alive, but he did have a very busy office, and he wanted what was called then, I think, a program aid. And
now I'm sure you have some very interesting experiences in this particular job that perhaps might be interesting.
Well, we had, I mean, the whole, the job was an experience. Every day there was an experience. This was, by the time I came to the YMHA, it was 1944. The war didn't end until the next year. So that we still had the servicemen, the single servicemen who came from all over the country, and many of them, an overwhelming majority of the Jewish servicemen seemed to be from the East, from the New York, New Jersey area, mostly because they went first to Fort Dix, New Jersey for their training, and when Fort Dix was filled, the second post to come to was Fort Knox. Fort Knox is the third largest army camp in the country. Fort Dix is the first largest. Fort Benning, Georgia, which was paratroopers, and not many of our boys went into the paratroops. So the third largest camp did receive most of many of the Eastern Jewish boys. The percentages went way up when you'd get draftees from the Eastern Seaboard. The percentage went up from like 0.4% to sometimes up to 1%, because of course the Jewish population is denser in that part of the country.
Well, just specifically, what did you do? What was your function?
We had Saturday night dances. We had Sunday morning brunches. We had Sunday night suppers. And we had dormitories. By the way, the gym in the old YMHA was turned into a dormitory. And during the week, it provided a marvelous opportunity for kids to have pillow fights with the pillows that were stored in the gym. And this really was not an unusual experience. We did what we called personal services, which almost entirely at that time consisted of tracking down homes for married servicemen to share. We used to have what we called bedrooms with kitchen privileges. It was a very patriotic thing for local families to share a bedroom. In some cases, their child was in service someplace else, and they rented out this child's room. Just this summer, by the way, in West Orange, New Jersey, I met a woman who works at the West Orange Center, West Orange Y, as they call it, who told me she had been in Louisville during this period, and she couldn't remember the name of the people with whom she had lived. But when she told me she lived on Fernwood, and their son was in, the husband was in service, I happened to realize that it was my cousin, was Sam Goldberg, who was in service, and Gertie was renting out his room. And she also lived at one time with the Bronstein family, whose son was killed in a hand grenade accident out at Fort Knox. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
But his first name escapes me for the second. Sidney Bronstein. And so this was the case every place that we found rooms for young couples. We spent our days when we weren't sending the couples out to look for rooms, calling families who we knew had sons in service and telling them that they... and asking them if they wouldn't rent a room. We did what we called war records. There was a an opinion, or at least there was an opinion that there was an opinion. I never heard it, but the Jewish Welfare Board must have known what they were talking about when they established what was called a War Records Division, because there was a feeling that there may be some anti-Semitic opinion that Jewish boys served only in the quartermaster, where it was safe. So that we kept very accurate war records, the result of which is a two-volume set which still exists in this library and which many of us here in Louisville own, called American Jews in World War II. And we kept records of citations that our local boys had received. God forbid, the killed in action, the wounded in action, missing in action. We kept a war records board up at the old YMHA, which resulted in a bronze plaque that is now in existence, I think, at the front entrance of the building. This building, by the way, was dedicated because a gentleman named Lewis Cohen, who was the first chairman of the Armed, of what was then called the Army and Navy Committee, remembered many years later that during the war, when there was some discussion about building a new building, at that time it was going to be on 4th and Kentucky, shall I stop? When there was talk of building a new building, and of course all of these plans had to be held up during the war when there was no when there were no building materials, there was a resolution passed that the new building, when it was built, would be dedicated to the men and women who had served in the armed services in World War II. Well, there was a long span of time from the end of the war in 1945 until the actual occupancy of our present building.
You're
on
now
Dutchman's
talking
Lane.
About the Jewish Community Center
right.
building on
right.
Dutchman's Lane.
I'm sorry, I forget. Yes, we changed from the YMHA to the Jewish Community Center, which was the new building that was being considered prior to World War II, actually, and then, as I said, was held out. Well, during that time, a lot of things had happened, and it wasn't as in to be concerned about the servicemen then as it had been in 1944 when this decision had been made. But Lewis Cohen was able to put his finger on the minutes from 11 years back and had reminded the powers that were then that the judgment, the decision was made that this building would be dedicated, this Jewish Community Center on Dutchman's Lane, successor to the YMHA, would be dedicated to the men and women of the armed services, and it was.
And then meanwhile, you moved your office up to the new Jewish Community
right.
Center
right.
on Dutchman's Lane
right.
and continued your same
our,
function.
Well, yes, I continued
a, more or less a liaison between Fort Knox,
right.
the Jewish boys at Fort Knox, right. and the Jewish community in Louisville.
Right. And by the way, I would say that this is still the case. Of course, things have changed, and my own function has changed, but we are still very much involved.
I just want to say hi.
The point that I was going to make when we were interrupted for a couple minutes, that I think is really very important, is that Louisville, somewhat uniquely, has an uninterrupted history of service to Jewish men in service. We, even when USO funds were withdrawn in Louisville in 1964, the Jewish community accepted a responsibility for continuing to serve men in service, or men and women in this service, I guess I should say persons, in this area. And they are still being served. Just as we had Onig Shabbats following religious services from time immemorial. And by the way, it's
now
important.
Now this is at Fort Knox you're
yes,
referring
at Fort
to.
Knox. By the way, I should say our Army and Navy Committee really was organized before there became a USO, before nationally people became aware that it was necessary to serve servicemen in an organized fashion. Our Louisville Jewish community undertook to form what was called the Army and Navy Committee. This committee was formed in 1940, and there was no national organization until February 1941. So that I think this says something for our far-sighted Louisville Jewish community. The owning Shabbats at Fort Knox, which at that time arranged for busloads of what we called junior hostesses and senior hostesses to go out to Fort Knox and serve salami sandwiches. And I guess you are aware that World War II was won with salami sandwiches. It really was, not only for the Jewish servicemen it served, but I guess now it can be told that salami sandwiches were the best bribes in the world to the motor pool people, who managed to get us buses to transport our hostesses when some of the other USO clubs couldn't figure out how we could manage these things, but with rationing and all that sort of thing. By the way, salami was purchased in the heat of rationing, or in the midst of rationing. Meat was very closely rationed, and that's why many of the servicemen who were served dinners were served fish and that sort of thing, because we saved up our ration stamps to buy salami, because there was no way we could win that war without salami. And thankfully we did manage. But that brings me to another thought, that there was another USO club on the other side of Fort Knox called the Radcliffe USO Club, and twice a week our women used to go out there and prepare kosher dinners, which was in itself a feat, but with the rationing, with a very tight rationing of canned goods as well as meat and almost anything that would be considered good. A lot of people used their own ration stamps, gave us their own ration stamps in addition to the ones that we were allocated, so that we could have good, nutritious meals made by Jewish mothers who wanted to see that that these boys were taken care of. The USO program itself in Louisville was held in the old YMAJ, which was turned over pretty much to the Armed Services Program, the Army and Navy program. Most of the Jewish people at that time lived in that general area, if not right at 2nd and Jacob, on the 2nd Street car line, which was the important thing between the university and, let's say, Kentucky Street, was the and particularly around Hill, Lee, Galbert, Magnolia, all of those fun streets where we all grew up. And the YMHA was very easily accessible. It was also well located as far as the bus station was concerned, which was the haven for servicemen who couldn't get on buses. There was no way that all of the servicemen who came into town on weekends could get Greyhound bus service, but it was a place where you could hitch rides. Anybody who had an extra seat in his car that was going to travel down Dixie Highway automatically drove past the bus station to see if he could pick up a soldier or two. And in those days they weren't considered hitchhikers. I shudder now to think of doing that sort of thing, even for a serviceman. But during World War II, that was considered a very patriotic thing to do. It later became quite a business for the servicemen themselves, who were fortunate enough to have cars. They would pick up servicemen at the bus station at Fort Knox and bring them to the bus station here in Louisville for a stipulated fee. And the same thing happened when the men would go back. The men, these were really boys.
Now, these boys would come in for the holidays.
They'd come in for holidays, right, as well as for weekends.
And you would see to it that they were housed in homes?
We placed as many as 250 servicemen over a Passover or a Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur holiday. The problem was never getting homes in Louisville where our boys would be welcomed. It was more of having the boys not having their passes rescinded at the last minute and having the families disappointed. Because again, there was food rationing, and the families would save up their ration stamps so that they could have a roast for a serviceman who came in for a Rosh Hashanah meal or for a Passover meal, or in many cases for a Sunday evening dinner, even though we served dinners at the YMHA every Sunday night. And Mrs. Cook, we used to call her Ma Cook, Lawrence Cook's mother. Lawrence Cook was the director of the YMHA before World War II. He was drafted. And Al Erlin was the director pro tem during Lawrence Cook's period in service. And his mother was very active in
our program.
Now
you're speaking of Mrs. Morris Cook.
Mrs. Morris Cook, that's right. And she was Ma Cook when she cooked on Sunday nights. And we used to serve our servicemen in shifts. There was no possibility of fitting in the number of servicemen who came to our breakfasts and to our dinners. Sadie Bear was very active in our breakfast program and to help prepare and serve many, many breakfasts at the old YMHA. Another program that we had that was certainly not something that that was a rarity was personal counseling. We had servicemen who were, first of all, had never been out of the New York area. And by the way, I think it's necessary to mention that World War II did more, first of all, for marrying off our Louisville girls probably than anything else that ever happened in the history of the state of Kentucky. Also, it did more to let the rest of the country know that we wore shoes, we didn't walk around in sunbonnets and all have little white picket fences. I remember when my sister became engaged to my brother-in-law, and my sister Lorraine became engaged to Sam Heinerfeld, and his mother wanted to send a diamond to be mounted for her engagement ring. And when he said, since he was on maneuvers at Camp Polk, Louisiana, he told his mother to send the diamond here. His mother was shocked to hear that we had something called a jewelry store in Louisville, Kentucky, USA. She really did not imagine that the cowboys and Indians here had any use for jewelry stores. And this became a tremendous shock to otherwise educated and informed New York and New Jersey servicemen who came here. In many cases, it was a negative because they came here and never dreamed that anybody from Louisville would ever cross the state line and would ever get to New York. And they told some of the most fabulous stories, most unbelievable fabrications, because they never dreamed that we would ever know anybody in New York, certainly that we would ever have any communication with anybody in New York. This was the source of many broken hearts, by the way, in Louisville, because there were married servicemen who came here who had no idea that this country was so small that any girl in Louisville could ever learn that they were indeed married to someone in New York, and they came here and carried on romances. If they couldn't be near the one they loved the one they were near.
Well, sometime around this time, you too met your true love.
Yes, I too met my true love because he came to work at the Jewish community. Well, this was after the war. David came after World War II to work at the then YMHA. And I think you might like to know that with a great deal of ambition and effort on my part, I was able, all these many years later, to work myself all the way up to the job that David had. When I met him, he came to work at the YMHA after he went back to Indiana University after the war ended and got his master's, and then came to work at the Louisville YMHA. And our offices were right across the hall from each other. Cars were still a little hard to come by. They had just gone back on the market, and I really think that was the secret of his having fallen in love with me. I had a car, and he didn't. And my office was right across the hall. He saved on transportation. And we began dating. I do have to tell you, and I don't know if I want this to be permanent history or not, but it really did happen. Renetta Mayer's office. Renetta Mayer was what was called the girl's secretary then. I guess she was really, I guess she was a girl's secretary. I don't know what you call them now. But anyway, she was in charge of the female youth program when I was a child growing up at the old YMHA. And when she saw David and me out together once and she learned that we were dating, she told David that I was, quote, a good catch because I had a private income. And David thinks that it's amazing that I've been able to keep this income so private. 30 years later, my income is still private. He doesn't know to what she was referring, and I have to say I didn't know either. But it was the secret of my success with David, I think.
And then you were married when?
We were married many years later. We were not married until 1953. David had left Louisville, had gone back to George Warren Brown School of Social Work in St. Louis. And he didn't realize that even that wasn't an escape, was not an escape, because after all, I had family there. And they kept tab on him, and they had learned from our armed services program. They provided him with home hospitality and that sort of thing, and then he came back here and visited, and I went there and visited, and we were married in 1953, like 6 years after we had met. So neither of us made fast decisions. I really don't know whether this is a place to tell you, but I have to tell you and give you an example of the kind of dedication that servicemen enjoyed from our local people. One of the things that we provided out at Fort Knox during the war were seders for young men who could not come into town. Any boy who could come into town was certainly invited to a home. But one year we had we had big plans for the two seders to be held out at Fort Knox, and the food was going to be prepared here in Louisville at the old YMHA. And someone got the brilliant idea that because of the transporting, it was so difficult, transporting it from Louisville to Fort Knox, somebody was able to get something made of metal, which, by the way, during the war was a very difficult thing to come by. Metal was one of the war casualties. And we got some galvanized garbage cans, and the women made chicken soup and matzo balls. Are you finished there? The women made chicken soup and matzo balls and put them in these galvanized garbage cans to be taken out to Fort Knox. Well, now, having had that experience and being older and wiser, I realize it was not a smart idea to store the chicken soup.